This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour in Africa News Tonight...
Kenyan police fired tear gas on opposition leaders and supporters marching Monday on the Electoral Commission in Nairobi. The opposition is demanding the commission to be dissolved.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. Details next. Also today, Egypt celebrated the 34th anniversary of Israel's handover of the Sinai Peninsula. And one of Africa's music icons, Papa Wemba, has died. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Kenyan police fire tear gas on opposition leaders and supporters marching on the Electoral Commission in Nairobi today. The opposition is demanding the commission be dissolved. Mohamed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital.
Riot police surrounded the offices of Kenya's Electoral Commission in central Nairobi, blocking opposition leaders and supporters from approaching the building. When the opposition groups and their members tried pressing forward, police moved in and tear-gassed the crowd. Running battles ensued along a busy highway in the capital for half an hour. Among those tear-gassed was former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Opposition parties are demanding Electoral Commission members leave office before the next general election in 2017. The politicians accused the commission of favouring the ruling Jubilee Alliance in the last election. And are counting signatures calling for a referendum on proposed land and electoral reforms. Opposition lawmaker Opiyo Wandayi joined the march to the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission.
We have spoken time and again and said that the IEBC, as currently constituted, has lost the confidence and trust of majority of Kenyans. And therefore, to pretend that such a body can provide something as serious as a general election is to push our luck too far.
Earlier, Nairobi's police chief said the opposition leader should look for other means if they want to remove the electoral body. In a statement issued Sunday, the IEBC called on opposition leaders to embrace dialogue. But Wandayi says march will continue until their demands are met.
This is going to happen weekly. For now, it will happen every month. But later on, we shall change tack, depending on how the situation unfolds. It is going to be a concerted effort, and there is no relenting.
The National Council of Churches of Kenya and the country's top labor federation have also called for the commission to be disbanded. The clerics say the commission has lost credibility and cannot organize a fair and free election. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Egypt celebrated the 34th anniversary of Israel's handover of the Sinai Peninsula today amid pro-government celebrations and smaller anti-government protests. The protests were over a decision to return two small Red Sea islands to Saudi Arabia. Edward Yeranian reports from Cairo.
Egyptian Air Force planes flew over Cairo in formation to celebrate Israel's 1982 return of the Sinai Peninsula as stipulated by the 1979 U.S. brokered Camp David peace accords. Scores of pro-government demonstrators turned out in various locations in Cairo to celebrate what Egyptian media refer to as Sinai Liberation Day. Security forces were on alert in key locations, guarding bridges, government offices, and Cairo's iconic Tahrir Square. A number of opposition groups, including the now-banned Muslim Brotherhood, had called for large anti-government demonstrations to protest the government's proposed return of two small islands in the Red Sea off the coast of the Sinai's large resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh. Al Jazeera TV, which the Egyptian government alleges is a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood, showed grainy video of a small protest in Giza, which was reportedly dispersed with tear gas. Al Jazeera also showed video of a protest in the Giza district of Do'i against the return of the islands. Several hundred people appeared to have turned out, chanting slogans against the handover. Small protests were also reported in Egypt's second largest city of Alexandria and in Damanhour, north of Cairo. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
For the first time this year, the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders has resumed migrant rescue operations on the Mediterranean. Its 50-meter vessel, known as Dignity One, brought 308 migrants to Sicily today after they were transferred from an Italian naval vessel 2 days ago. Most of the migrants were from Eritrea and were found off the coast of Libya. The group, also known as MSF, plans to deploy two larger vessels on the Mediterranean soon. They will have medical staff on board. MSF has called on European Union not to treat migrants as criminals and to provide safe alternatives to sea crossings. In related news, Italy's defense minister says NATO is expected to begin patrols off the Libyan coast in 3 months. Robert Pinotti says NATO allies are expected to approve the plan at a summit in Warsaw, July 7th. The patrols would prevent economic migrants from using the Western Mediterranean route to enter Europe. They would send the migrant vessels back to Libya, where conditions remain violent and unstable. The International Criminal Court says it is opening a preliminary probe into the violence that erupted last year in Burundi. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more on what that means.
International Criminal Court prosecutor Fatou Bensouda says this preliminary probe is not an investigation and offered no timeline of how long it will last. But in a statement announcing her decision Monday, she says she's been closely tracking the uptick of violence in the Central African nation that's been a member of the Hague-based court since 2004.
My office has reviewed communications and reports about killings, imprisonment, torture, rape, and other forms of sexual violence, as well as cases of enforced disappearances. Because all these acts appear to fall within the jurisdiction of the ICC, I have decided to open a preliminary examination into the situation in Burundi since April of 2015.
Burundi's political crisis was triggered last year when President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for a third term. Bensouda says at least 430 people have been killed, 3,400 have been arrested, and more than 230,000 Burundians have fled the country. On Monday, a high-ranking general and his wife were reportedly killed, dropping their daughter off at school. Human Rights Watch International Justice Advocate Director Gerardine Mattioli-Zeltner welcomed the ICC's announcement, but said it is only a first step.
We hope this announcement by the ICC that it's opening a preliminary examination in Burundi is really a wake-up call to all those who commit these crimes or order these crimes to be committed, that there will not be impunity anymore for grave human rights violations.
The United Nations last week accused Burundi's security services of torturing and illegally detaining several hundred people this year. Last month, the European Union suspended aid to the Burundian government over the political crisis. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A Burundi Army Major General and two others were killed today in an ambush in Bujumbura. It's the latest in a series of attacks on government, police and military officials. Moses Havyarimana reports from the Burundi capital.
It's been 1 year since incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza publicly announced he would run for a third term in office. That announcement sparked protests and violence. More than 400 people have been killed since then, and more than 250,000 have been displaced. The new wave of targeted assassinations continue to rock the capital, and this time it was Burundi Army General Athanase Kararuza, together with his wife, who were shot dead in an ambush. Gaspar Baratuza is the Burundi Army spokesman. He says that at 7 a.m., the Major General's car was ambushed in Bujumbura when he was going to his office. He was currently the senior advisor in the office of the Vice President on issues related to security and defense. The Major General is among a number of officials who have been killed in ambushes since the swearing-in of the incumbent president last year. Baratuza described today's attack. He says three people were killed, the general and his wife together with one of his bodyguards, and other three people were injured, including his child and a driver together with one bodyguard. He says the attackers have no any other intention other than damaging the unity of Burundian army that it had since 2005. In the past day, tension has risen in the capital as heavy gunfire and grenade explosions were heard in the northern part of Bujumbura. Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye spoke to VOA.
Today night there has been a shooting, an attack on a police officer. His wife has been killed. The brother of the wife was also killed.
On Sunday, Burundi Minister of Solidarity, Martin Nivyabandi, narrowly escaped a grenade attack while he was attending a church service in the capital's Nyakabiga neighborhood. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And a Burundian was awarded a humanitarian prize for the rescue of more than 30,000 orphans during the nation's 1993 civil war. Margaret Barankitsi was honored yesterday at a humanitarian conference in Yerevan, Armenia. The prize includes the gift of $100,000. Barankitsi, 59, worked at a Catholic orphanage and helped children during the civil war between the Tutsi and Hutu populations. Past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. In its annual World Malaria Report, the World Health Organization predicts the possible elimination of malaria in 15 countries in the next 4 years. That includes 6 in sub-Saharan Africa. The long-range goal is to end malaria in 35 countries by 2030. Dr. Richard Cybulski is the lead author of the WHO report. From Geneva, he spoke to VOA's David Arnold about plans to achieve this public health breakthrough.
When setting those goals for 2030, we looked at different sources of evidence. One was looking at previous trends in malaria and how fast malaria has come down in the last 15 years. We also looked at current country plans for reducing malaria and their own ambitions. And we undertook some mathematical modelling, which enabled us to assess what would happen if we were to increase the coverage of the malaria interventions that we have today. Insecticide-treated bed nets, which prevent people from getting bitten by mosquitoes, which carry malaria. We also have indoor residual spraying, which prevent mosquitoes from living in households. And we also have effective diagnosis and treatment of malaria. So if we were able to make those interventions available, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, where malaria is most prominent, then we believe we could achieve those objectives.
Can you tell me how serious the epidemic has been in Africa and how soon there is going to be relief for South Africa and some other countries?
90% of cases and deaths occur there, but we have seen quite large reductions in the last 15 years in mortality rates of 66% in sub-Saharan Africa. Those are due to the increase in availability of certain interventions. Malaria is still a serious problem there. A child dies every 2 minutes from malaria in sub-Saharan Africa, and these deaths are largely preventable if people were given access to the prevention tools and good access to malaria diagnosis and treatment, then almost all these deaths can be avoided.
What will happen to the rest of Africa?
The aim is to actually have progress occurring in all countries in sub-Saharan Africa, including those 6 most affected, but also those countries that have least malaria at present. The report released by WHO today identifies some countries in sub-Saharan Africa that are close to eliminating malaria. These are Algeria, Botswana, Cabo Verde, Comoros, South Africa, and Swaziland. We believe that these can make substantial strides to removing the transmission of malaria within their borders and become malaria-free. by year 2020.
You must feel very good about the accomplishments if your predictions are correct.
There's been tremendous progress in the last 15 years, which is actually quite astonishing. That doesn't mean we can rest on our laurels, however. Malaria is always prone to come back. As soon as you reduce investments in malaria control, malaria will come back, and it will come back with a vengeance.
That was Dr. Richard Cybulski of the WHO from Geneva. He spoke to VOA's David Arnold. Elephant crop raiding continues to be a major source of conflict between people and wildlife in Kenya. One researcher is hoping to alleviate the problem by using elephants' natural aversion to bees to deter them from farms. VOA's Jill Craig visited the project before this month's Giant Club Summit, which brings dignitaries together at Mount Kenya to find solutions to combat poaching, the number one threat to elephants.
African elephants are the largest land animals on Earth, weighing as much as 6 tons and measuring up to 7.5 meters long. Despite their size, elephants still find humans to be their greatest threat. Tens of thousands of elephants are killed every year for their ivory tusks. The head of the Human-Elephant Coexistence Program at conservation group Save the Elephants, Dr. Lucy King, says poaching is devastating animal populations across Africa. But another major concern is human-wildlife conflict. When elephants eat crops, it causes financial loss to the farmers and potential harm to the elephants.
The population in Africa is increasing exponentially, and the land space for elephants and other large game is shrinking exponentially. Corridors are being blocked, infrastructure development is coming up, and so I believe the next big challenge for elephants is going to be conflict. And that interface between actual farmers and elephants is the one that we're working on, and we feel we can do something with.
King learned that when elephants hear this sound, they round up their herd and move away quickly. So the Elephants and Bees Project was born. King and her team work near Kenya's Tsavo East National Park, where they help 22 farmers build and maintain beehive fences, which consist of between 10 and 21 hives, depending on the size of the farmer's plot. The hives are strung along the periphery of the farmer's crops to deter the elephants from crop raiding. The team monitors each farmer's hives carefully, taking notes on each one and also working with the farmers to determine the elephants' movements in the area. Local farmer Charity Mwangome, who built her fence in 2012, believes all the buzz. She says it helps a lot because if the elephants come in and they see the fence, they stop and do not come into the farm. They instead go around. But the beehive fence, which King says has about an 80% success rate, does not just help keep out the elephants. It also provides farmers with another means of income, through honey production. And for farmers who are on average making $300 per year, less than a dollar a day, the 30 to 50% income boost makes a big difference. Elephants and Bees Project Research Center Coordinator Matthew Rudolph says the biggest problem is just keeping up with consumer demand for the honey, which he and other staff members process.
People pick it up as soon as it is jarred.
Which promises a sweeter future for farmer and elephant alike. Jill Craig, VOA News, Voi, Kenya.
One of Africa's music icons, Papa Wemba, has died. Wemba died yesterday after falling ill during a performance at the Urban Music Festival of Anu Mambo in Abidjan. He was 66. The cause of death has not been announced, but he was reported to have had health problems. Ivory Coast will pay tribute to the Congolese Rumba and Soukous star when Wednesday with an all-night tribute concert. AFP reports the concert will feature 100 singers and musicians from Africa and around the world. They'll take the stage from 9 p.m. until dawn. Family members have arrived in Abidjan to make arrangements to bring Papa Wemba's body back home. Here is Papa Wemba from 1997 with the song Mama. Mama.
mama soki ozala kaka na bomoi mbele na sengi ozangisanga susu wana jamolingatinga na lela yo seka jamolingati yo olalanga na lamuka jamolingati ata ngumbi atungisanga soki na beli ozalaki kota na tongosa banda yo kenda na nkuma abandoni récompense na yo nakopesa na niango ata na leli na niango dor lotema yango na yebeli yo nzembo oyo mama nyondo elengi ya libele ya mama abota ngai eleki barecepte nyonso ya bakordoble nga na lia ata mafuta tomati ezalaki te kasi yango elekaki mosuni na elengi banda yo kenda apeti esilanga nakoma kolia kaka mpo na sepelisa monoko ye matea ya mamezanga bileke mpo eminerval kasi eleki baleso bametre baprofeseur bapesanga mama soki ozalaki kaka na bomoi mbele na sengi batia yo ministre edukation mbele baparke baprizo nyonso bakanga mbele kutu mutu mabe azali te lelo nakanisi yo mingi mama bojour aniversaire na ngai ekomi pene invite bakolia bakomela masanga yo kutu artiza nango oyo ozali te epai ozali soki okutani na okasion e tindelanga karte de veu ata fololo esengo na ngai ekozala multiplie fois deux normalement feti ya lelo ezali ya yo sermon d'hypocrate bamedecin bakosalaka yanga serma ozala toujours mama nanga ata babandeli mokili soki balazomi yanga serma ozala toujours mama nanga
je voulais yo asakei nakitalobe na pierre shongo bapene kato na kauka batelaka ngai mwana
That's Papa Wemba with Mama. The music icon died yesterday at age 66. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou discusses World Immunization Week, the progress made on the vaccine front, and the remaining challenges. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Let's chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa.